Speciale Manifesta 7. Voci, suoni, interviste e incontri della Biennale d'Arte Contemporanea Europea quest'anno in Italia. Tutti gli approfondimenti su radiopapesse.org. Gianni Pettena non è certo più un esordiente, ma è stato invitato a Manifesta 7, la biennale europea itinerante che invece è dedicata proprio ai giovani artisti. Lorenzo Fusi lo ha intervistato per noi, ripercorrendo a partire dagli anni 60 e 70 la storia e le evoluzioni del rapporto tra architettura e arte. La New York di Gordon Matta Clark e Robert Smithson, l'environmental design di James Wines, le derive degli Archi Stars, il carciofone di Bilbao e il nuovo Museion. L'intervista è in inglese.
So, well, in the first place, you were recounting a little bit of your own personal history and biography as an NYU teacher in Venice. So, maybe some little memories about that experience.
As a teacher in...
As a teacher in
located in Palazzo Grassi.
In Venice.
In Venice, Palazzo Grassi was not ruined as it is, as it has been ruined by... a famous Italian architect, and the palace was intact, original, with a collection of old clothes in a, at, I think, the second floor. We could use the top floor, the ground, and the mezzanine, I think. And it was a beautiful location, and was a beautiful experience also to teach. I was teaching environmental design, and. Up in New York, I was often a guest of another young teacher. We are speaking about the early 70s, speaking about New York. There was James Wines, that was the founder of the Site Group, that is located in New York and is one of the most important artists that dedicated the entire work to the problems of the town, the environment, and the architecture done by artists. And from my point of view, architecture done by artists is the architecture of today that deserves to be considered the only architecture that deserves to be defined architecture. Because the one done by architects is too much strategic for the career of the archistars, but very often is not an architecture that contains research, elements of innovation in language and in the conceptual base that you are that you have to renovate. You know? You have to give to your generation your version of reading of reality, no? In terms of a contemporary language and in terms of your specific language of each of you, no? Now is your turn for your generation. So do it, please. So you make me outdated and I finally go fishing.
So your position has always been very interesting because you have been kind of shifting continuously between architecture, art and art making, theory and teaching. How has been your experience in transforming through the years? How have you seen both architecture and art changing and the cultural debate changing in the time frame that you were describing between the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s and nowadays?
Well, I was a student of architecture. Thinking that the architecture they were teaching you in the architectural schools was the kind of architecture that was had to interpret the development of culture of that moment. Nothing more wrong. The teachers I had were educated before the war. So they were teaching us their own ideas, the ideas of the rationalism, the ideas of the functionalism of the 30s, of the 40s. But we were in the 60s. There had been a world war in between. So the situation was totally different. And the ideas of architecture were still imprisoned in those conceptual grids, conceptual and geometric grids. I personally was feeling quite uncomfortable. The idea of architecture they were teaching was not corresponding to my idea. That was not that clear, but what was for sure not the one of my teachers. So after the first year of a very regular attendance to the lectures, etc., I stopped attending lectures. I remained a regular student, but my school was were the art galleries, more than the museums. The art galleries were the ones that, because of the presence of people of my age, of my generation, were the ones, the places where I learned more. And this was my school also of language and of concepts that I slowly translated into my personal field that, from my point of view, was architecture. So I became an architect that was making architecture with the tools of art, not with the tools of their architect.
Can you please go through the work which you have on exhibit now in Manifesto? Can you please tell to our listeners a little bit about the projects and the artworks you have on show on exhibit right now?
The work it is in Manifesto, Rovereto, is related to those times, to the first years of the 70s, and is related to my condition of an artist, or if you want, of an architect, using the tools of art. And there was me in Europe dealing always with a context with too heavy presence of the past. You have a too heavy presence of the past. Europe, compared to America, is a place full of people and full of history. So besides the people, the land, the towns, are superimpositions of layers, of centuries, of previous presences of cultures and of actors. And so I was invited to go to the States as an artist in residence in the Minneapolis School of Art and Design. And before me was Christo Yavachev, and after me was Piero Consagra, another Italian artist. America for me was the place where I could find places without the presence of the past, like for anybody, a blank sheet of paper, and starting finally to make my own architectures, not having to deal with the heavy presence of the past, making room for me, because we have the right to speak our languages, even with heavy presence of the past. They had in the past. We have the right to speak our language, even in architecture. So I went to the deserts of the Southwest. Beautiful, I say, no? A blank sheet of paper. I finally do something without the presence of the past. And I learned that the deserts in the Southwest of the States are not exactly deserts. They were already architectures, even if looking as nature, untouched nature. They were architectures. Why? They were architectures because of the inhabitants of those places. The Native Americans that mainly, before they were compressed into the reservation, they were mainly nomads, using the environment as any other animals, migrating because of the seasons from north to south, from east to west. So, as any other animal, they were recognizing architecture in the existing nature. No? So, using the caverns, inventing the teepee, the foldable house, no? And having their own valley of temples, monument valley. It's not a beautiful desert with the presence of beautiful rocks that John Ford, no? Celebrated in many classic cowboy movies. Monument Valley is the valley of the temples of the Navajo people that was using that area for centuries. So I discovered that the best way of making architecture is to find it in nature. As soon as you start to build a screen in between you and nature, you reveal your condition of a traitor, somebody formerly nomadic that became stanchial, became a farmer, and then nature, because of the screens you were building, were starting to be something else. The thing that was outside your residence, the thing that could make you in trouble because of the seasons, ruining your cultivations, etc., etc. So the screens you start to build, not related with nature, but to defend yourself from nature, they reveal that your beautiful, technically the best conceptual condition for the use of the environment is gone. You are starting to build screens. And those screens are not only the places you are living in, but the screens you are beginning to build are also the signals of your social status, no? You always live somewhere and you are judged because of the somewhere where you live in. So I started to try to influence the ideas of architecture through my work, claiming that the status of being mixed, being part of nature, was the best conceptual attitude you could have in relating with the physical environment. And as soon as you build something, you start to make scenes. You cannot build architecture without making a scene. So you have to be careful when you do that.
Just to bring you down to Manifesta again, you have to consider that the listener is not necessarily going to actually see the work or haven't seen the work yet. So can we go like a little bit through the formal solutions you found, like for the plaque and the Expedrellini?
Mm-hmm. I'm very honored to be invited in the Manifesta. Manifesta is a biennial, European biennial, dedicated expressly to young artists. But look at me. I'm not that young.
Younger than that.
Judging me physically, I'm not that young. I am a grandfather already. Why they invited me? Because many young artists invited for Manifesta were always speaking about my work of the 70s. And they were using my work as a point of reference for their own work today. So they invited me to show some of my early work and also to do a contemporary piece. Expedrellini, the plaque outside of the facade, is the signal of a failure. This is a project on that plaque that I gave to the organization of Manifesta the middle of February, the last February. They were so well organized that in spite of the money I found of sponsors for to build my piece remained unbuilt. That plaque speaks about a project that I've done for the facade of the Expedrellini in February, and we are in the middle of July, and we have only the drawing in that metal plaque.
So that would be like physically the difference between architecture and art?
No, because that piece was speaking about architecture, but was an art piece.
Of course. Yeah.
And was obviously also a sort of a lesson on architectural perception, on space perception. Because the five elements were on five different planes. So from a certain distance, you could see the entire piece compacted into a sort of architectural logo, no, like a Greek temple. No, the more you were approaching the building, those elements were moving, being in five different planes. No, and then dematerializing the classic architectural logo. In the drawing, then, that kind of work was dedicated to that building, to that facade. That is a kind of unlucky, out of proportions. So I used the golden section system of proportions to add a piece to the facade to make it proportioned, no? And it's everything unbuilt, naturally. So you add this double possibility of double level of reading and of perceiving an architectural adventure, no?
You also said you have some works on show in the museum here in Bolzano.
Yes, yes. They are related to some of my work of the 80s, middle 70s and early 80s. And some of them are related to my position, my conceptual position, compared to the ones architects of my generation, in which I was saying, okay, you are the architects, but I am the spy. So there is a work that speaks about me in a picture with all of them hanging a plate saying, I am the spy. And then there is another work that instead is related to me. This is my region. I was born in this town. I lived here only 10 years and then I moved. But I was coming back because of the family, often in here, in this town, and in a little village in the Dolomites from which my family comes. So the mountains that were framing my landscape here and there in the Dolomites are remembered by memory and cut in plexiglass, the profiles of those mountains, but remembered by memory while I was not here. And from Florence, where I live since 50 years, I brought this suitcase with those profiles down to the end, the southern part of Italy, Santa Maria Otranto, near Santa Maria di Leuca. No, you see, Italy is like that, roughly. I was born here. Once I had to go here. And then I brought with me this suitcase with the profile of those landscapes remembered by memory. As soon as I reached that old castle where the exhibition was hosted, I took out those profiles. I left the suitcase on the pavement was sand. I left the suitcase and in the sand I placed those profiles of mountains and I laid down on the sand just looking at them with nostalgia. And this is the work that is on show in the museum.
So now the museum is one of the very few buildings which has been designed in this country expressively for accommodating art and specifically contemporary art. So what's your perception? How's your experience of that building? Since you're very critical in terms of architectural theory, and does it work? Is it efficient? Do you think it's too monumental for the function it has? And what's in general your attitude towards exhibition spaces designed
by architects.
Well,
the building here, I think, is very correct. Leaves a lot of space not really defined and not killed by the intentions of the architects. The architects have been quite generous to leave the spaces flexible enough. The problem is that the volume is not that big. So it's a new museum, but it's small. So, for example, this building we have in front, the ex-Alumix, buildings of the 30s, beautiful, well-kept, will become an extra space of the museum, especially dedicated for the temporary exhibition and for large installations. While then in the museum will be, in the years, more the permanent collection, no? It's quite nice not to have a central point and branches, no, in the town. And this is one of the cases. I don't think it's the worst solution. I think it's a good solution. I prefer this solution than an artichoke in the middle of a town like in Bilbao.
But I'd like to know something more.
Oh, do.
And I want to know something about Gordon Matta Clark.
Even if we started in similar years, very similar years. I started to make my very first installations in June 68. It's my first work. And I think in 68, Gordon Matta graduated himself in architecture. Mm-hmm. So we are both. Gordon Matta has been a friend, by the way, that I met in New York in 72. And we discovered, meeting each other, that we were two students of architecture with problems, similar problems, with the ocean in between, no? But giving to our problems very similar solutions. He was making holes, destroying abandoned buildings, no, in a certain manner. I was using abandoned buildings myself, but generally not destroying them, but covering them by clay and filming the process of drying of the clay on the buildings, or framing those buildings in a wooden box and filling up with water, waiting the ice to englobate the house, or having on the top of the abandoned building some hoses with holes, letting the water going down and freezing the external part. No? I was doing things like those. Very similar work, if you want, claiming to work the architecture language with new conceptual bases and updated language. No? Those were gestures, no? Very often strong provocations, if you want, typical of our age of that time, but they were proposing a new point of view relating with the man-made environment. We were meeting in New York, often drinking at Max's Kansas City. That was a beautiful bar near Times Square, where we were meeting often every night, discussing about art and drinking. Around 11:30, the group of Andy Warhol was coming, the crowd of every... And the upper floor was Lou Reed singing.
Surely yeah. That was a magic moment for New York.
Velvet Undergrounds.
Yes. Well, I do also think, I don't really see so many direct reciprocal influences between the work of the two. I mean, of course...
Have not been, but we were really doing... we were not feeling in competition. For example, at the end of 72, I wrote a book called L'Anarchitetto. And 6 months after, not knowing about that book that was published in Italy, they founded
an architecture
mm-hmm. group. No? So we were really breathing the same air, looking for similar goals with independent roots. No?
That's exactly what I was just about to say. I think it was very much a sort of a spontaneous response from a generation of trained architects who were feeling like the language of architecture was exhausted, and they were looking, instead of their own group of people, they were looking outside of it, finding a new medium, new language, new ways to explore the habitat and the environment, and therefore they would have been more interested in the experimentations that artists proceeding from land art or kind of more gestural conceptualism. They were more important and more impacting than the work of a previous generation of architects. And I found that was really a critical point for all those languages, because architecture and art has never been the same ever since. So they do belong to a very lucky generation in many ways, because yes, it has been a turning point. There have been a sort of a confluential upbringing of a new consciousness, of environment, of culture, of those languages. And they really were on the upfront of it. They were really kind of fighting for... I really perceive there's something very utopian in their own generation, which is, I so much regret not to have experienced myself, because I was born when all of that was already past. So there's a sort of a envy and jealousy for having experienced a very specific political, social, cultural moment.
I'd like to end just... remembering Gordon Matta, that died in 77. 78. I was very lucky and pleased to be able to meet the widow in Siena. Thank you for building up the occasion. And also to remember Robert Smithson. Because Robert Smithson, one of the founders of the land art, personal friend of mine since 66, I met him in Rome when he made the asphalt rundown in 67. And we became friends. We were meeting often in New York and also somewhere else in the States. And he was, again, another young friend that died when at the age of 35, flying over what had to be his last work. He was flying over with a small plane over the Broken Circle in Amarillo, Texas. And that work was finished by Richard Serra and the widow, the young widow of Robert Smithson, Nancy Holt, that is still a very good artist, still alive. So they have been two good friends, died quite early. I survived them, but I like to remember them because of the friendship I had with them and because, for example, speaking about Smithson, because of the particular gift he gave to me one day in New York, bringing me in Central Park, illustrating me Central Park, and analyzing Central Park as the very first original earthwork ever done. Frederick Law Olmsted is the very first land artist, American land artist, besides of being one of the great Americans, because he invented the concept and he designed Central Park, winning the competition, invented the concept of public park expressly conceived for the public use. Because till that moment, the public parks were private gardens opened to the public, conceived for a family, a rich family, for a wealthy family. And then, later on, centuries after, opened to the public. He invented the concept of a public park designed expressly for people. And he invented the concept of natural park. 5 years after the end of Central Park, he moved to the West, employed by a mining company. And while riding his horse in the area of the mining company, he discovered Yosemite Valley. And he said, gosh, I wish people of the towns can enjoy those things. So he invented the idea of a natural park, building lodges, building itineraries of different difficulties, no? Protecting with laws those beautiful spaces as Yosemite Valley was, and finally succeeding in having it built, having it done, no? So he is a great American. He is one of the founders of the American culture. He was working mainly in between 1850 and the 1900, the beginning of 1900. And he has done an enormous amount of work. He was putting together initiatives incredible, like putting together USA and Canada to clean and to make of the Niagara Falls a park. He was the one wanting and succeeding in doing that. New York, Central Park, he wins the competition, but there is no money. Yesterday, as today, New York City had not the money to build that incredible park. And he had the idea of cutting a ring around the area, making it in slices and selling pieces after pieces to private people that could build over a park that was not yet existing. So selling the lots around, he got the money to build the park. So what you get now is in New York is because of his creativity, of his invention, of his talent in organization, no? In making together for the sake of the public, of the people, important facilities missing. Think about New York without Central Park, without Morningside Park, without Prospect Park in Brooklyn, without Riverside Drive Park, all works by him. So Robert Smithson taught me about him. 20 years later, he's dead. I got some money in Florence, and I organized the very first exhibition of the presentation drawings of Olmsted in Europe in the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. And I dedicated the catalog that was sold out in 3 days to all the American universities as soon as they got the beautiful pictures. Huh?
Gianni, thank you so much on behalf of Radio Papessa and New York University. Thank you for being with us.